From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The attacks on President Donald Trump from all quarters seem to step up again this past week. Portions of a book by former Watergate Washington Post reporter Bob Woodward were released, alleging chaos inside the White House. And before the book's release, now set for September 11th, an anonymous editorial was published in the New York Times from a person the Times claimed was an insider at the White House, which appeared to ratify some of Woodward's claims. The author of the editorial found fault with President Trump's policy towards Russia in particular as not being aggressive enough. Meanwhile, Russia and China are about to begin joint military exercises, the largest such exercises since 1981. For all that and more, we spoke with Professor Tony Montero via Skype from Philadelphia Thursday.
We are at the end of the beginning and the start of a new phase, right on time for the midterm elections.
Yeah.
And it's obvious that the midterm elections are about impeachment. You know, they were trying to deny it, but it's very clear now. Even the so-called socialist within the Democratic Party, the young women who are winning primaries over old guard, mainly pro-Hillary Democrats, even they are pro-impeachment. And that's obvious. But then at another level, there is the intelligence services who are pushing for the coup d'etat option.
Right.
Some call it a soft coup. We've called it a moving coup d'etat. But however you look at it, if the Democrats take the House back, then it will be a signal for the intelligence services, sometimes what they call the deep state, to step up every effort to effect a coup d'etat, an overthrow. Now, it's obvious that in that letter, this is a letter of coup plotters. I mean, pardon me, the opinion piece is the thinking of the coup plotters within the administration itself or around the administration. And they you know, in this opinion piece, I don't know if everybody's looked at it, but one of the things that they talk about is that early on in the administration, there were efforts to organize an immediate coup, and that was through the 25th Amendment or through which would go into effect if a number of members of the administration, cabinet secretaries and others, came to the Congress and said that Trump was no longer fit to govern morally or intellectually or psychologically.
Right.
And therefore, there would be the conditions. Now, how that would work, nobody knows, but the conditions to remove him from office. So for all of the time that he's been in office, there have been plots and plans to carry out a coup d'etat. And now the question is why? And I think we've made this clear over the months because of his position on things like NAFTA, TPP, NATO, detente with Russia, a pullback of the military, and a different approach to world politics and a move away from hegemonism and unipolarity to a multipolar world. This is his approach to world politics. It has everything to do with empire and U.S. imperialism at this stage. And the ones that are least able to see it are the phony left in this country.
It's frightening.
Which is so fake and so silly and so infantile that no one can take them seriously.
Yeah, it's you know, this is when I was a kid, I don't know, maybe in my early teens maybe or something, when I first started hearing this and trying to apply it to something that I was, you know, focusing on, the term ivory tower. This is like textbook. The people are so it's amazing to me how many people that are like in the left leadership positions, or somehow how they got there. And this is another question altogether. But are ivory tower types? In other words, even though they may have their little, you know, rooms where they organize people together and they have the little meetings and all of that stuff and whatever rules they inherited from Rousseau or Lenin or whatever to run the meetings, they're really completely disconnected from reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, and whatever formulations they come up with about what's going on around them, you know, it's like it's based off a slide rule instead of touching a piece of material somewhere. It's just pretty scary. You know, you're looking at this article. There's the problem with Trump is in foreign policy, is that he was reluctant to expel so many of Mr. Putin's spies as punishment for the poisoning of a former Russian spy in Britain. That's what I'm hired by the White House to work in the White House, and instead I'm stealing papers off his desk, as this person says, because I don't like his foreign policy, and that is what they offer for it. This first of all, most of those people were either spies, like all diplomats are spies, or not spies, because they're diplomats. That's what they do. And the poisoning of a former Russian spy, there's been no trial, there's no proof, there's no nothing. To undermine the president from inside the White House over something shaky as that, and then say that you're the steady hand and he's the lunatic, you know, to me, that sounds... they were talking about treason with Putin. Having a meeting with Putin was treason. This is treason. This is criminal. This ought to be prosecuted. And this is the kind of thing in a lot of places in the world, people get executed for it, and a lot of those places are allies of the United States.
Well, you know, I think that the fact that we are seeing the word treason being used so regularly against opponents... In other words, John Brennan, I think, probably first used it or got the biggest recognition or publicity in the press for using it when Trump met with Putin. Now, Putin is pointing the treasonous finger, the finger of treason, back at his opponents. I think we have to see that as symbolic of a stage in the political crisis of the country, and how each side have now reached a point where there can be no compromise, that it is a zero-sum game. Either both sides see it as a fight to the death. And you might remember a couple of weeks ago, Trump said that if he is impeached, it will lead to violence. And I think his evaluation is accurate.
Right.
His base has not been moved one iota by all of this.
Right.
The polls show that the sides are still divided the way they were at the time of the election.
Yep.
The question is, I think, where the younger generation will fall, who for the most part have been above the fray, not involved in it, a bit confused by it, and by the youth, their seeking of leadership, will forces like Antifa, who I believe is a completely infiltrated organization, whether they will assume the high ground, whether the phony left and the liberal left, which in a larger sense are part of this moving coup d'etat, will capture the imagination of the young people, or whether or not a leadership that understands what is at stake, and what is at stake is whether or not the intelligence and security forces, in alignment with the neoliberals and neocons, can overturn a duly elected president. And if that occurs, we're at a new stage of the consolidation of extra-legal political power on the part of forces who are in fact committed to U.S. empire and U.S. hegemony, and are prepared to resume the march towards war with Russia and intervention in Syria. And I and we could say a little bit more about Syria in this particular moment of Idlib and other things, but that's the way I see it. The opposition to Trump is the most aggressive, militarist, military-oriented group within the ruling class.
Yeah, I think the hegemony is the key word there. This is the group that you know sees their multipolar moment from 1991 as, you know, that being the end of history. They published that in an anonymous article in the New York Times.
The unipolar, not multipolar. They went to the unipolar.
That's right, the unipolar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, okay, first, they're looking at the elections here, and they've got everybody, you know, they're working the Democratic Party base with this, you know, impeachment threat. You know, they're every day, oh, it's hard, you know, it's about to happen, et cetera. No matter what happens with the election, and I want to talk about that for a minute also in a second, but they have to flip the Senate, and there's barely enough seats up for that to happen, and no candidates really that are offering it, because in order to the impeachment is like an indictment. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. Okay, then there's the removal from office, which was like a conviction. The impeachment takes place in the House.
If I could just interrupt you.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, I they realize that taking the House back would be to begin like a grand jury.
Right. That's what it is.
A trial where they put forward the indictments and the particulars of the indictment.
Right.
Well, but that becomes a platform.
Yeah, of course.
To wage a national political campaign against him. They know that they're not going to take the Senate back, and therefore they cannot remove him by legal or constitutional means via impeachment.
Right.
But they can use these other means. And I think this anonymous op-ed piece in the New York Times begins to suggest that there are coup plotters within the administration and close to the administration.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, this anonymous op-ed is a way of destabilizing and creating paranoia and nervousness within the small group that is committed to Trump and keeping him in office.
It's a psyop,
I think we're looking at the uses of extra-legal means of removing him from office.
Yep.
And the reason I say it's a zero-sum game, the forces opposed to him are not in the mood for any type of compromise. It's either him out or nothing.
Right.
And that's the way they're playing it. And we see it in these hearings for Kavanaugh's appointment to the Supreme Court, the disruption by Harris and Booker, Cory Booker, and these kind of you know, so-called women's rights activists and so on and so forth, which is nothing but the neoliberal Democratic Party organization. I mean, this is so obvious what is going on, and not to oppose it, to be indifferent to it or complicit with it, is, in fact, since they want to use the word fascism, is a form of the collaboration with fascism.
Yeah. you know, when you're talking about, look, abortion rights are very important, for example. And so, you know, a discussion about abortion rights and the Supreme Court nominee is definitely an important thing. You have a discussion about free speech around Kaepernick and, mm-hmm. you know, the knee, quote unquote, and football mm-hmm. and all of that. You have basically a coup d'etat that's underway in the United States, and this guy's on one side, and the CIA and the press and all of them are on the other side, and people want to instead divide up sides about how they feel about abortion or genuflecting at a football game or whatever, mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. is being encouraged, whipped up by every kind of media out here, and mm-hmm. the heads of the alternative media are being kept in full view of the world and their stockholders in these Senate hearings and House hearings. To make sure mm-hmm. that they have a finger on them, and, mm-hmm. And so no one is talking about this actual threat at the moment. And there's something right. something else. You pointed this out to me back early in the 2016 election, like in 2015, and that was to not mistake the candidates for the movements that are lifting them up. And
absolutely,
when you look at the phenomenon that's developing in the Democratic Party with respect to these unexpected winners in the primaries, mm-hmm. on the one hand, I wouldn't vote for any of them for dog catcher any more than I would vote for Clinton or Trump or any of the others, on the one mm-hmm. hand. On the other hand, their being elected has less to do, in my opinion, because all of the Democrats are saying that they would impeach Trump, so that mm-hmm. kind of filters out, has less to do with that and more to do with the way that they are distinct from the Democratic Party that exists now. Socialism, mm-hmm. you know, all these things that represent the same kinds of forces that we're starting to gather behind Sanders. The right. problems that gave rise to Sanders voters and Trump voters have not gone away. Mm-hmm. And the Trump voters feel that Trump has been trying to make them go away and being frustrated by everybody else. And the mm-hmm. others know that the solution, because the ones that live through it with Sanders know that the solution isn't to sit down and play ball with whatever the Democratic Party regurgitates at the end of an election. So what's going to happen after the election this year?
Well, see, this is the whole thing. So-called socialists or the so-called Sanders Democrats do not have a program or vision to go forward. And this is just, I think, an effort to rebrand the Democratic Party and to so-called broaden its base and activate the youth, women, and what they call minority voters to believe that the party that they abandoned in 2016 is a new kind of party, and in 2018, they should rush back to this party. Whether that will happen is not clear at this point. But you're right. The overhanging issue is a moving, or what some call a soft coup d'etat. And you cannot separate any of these electoral processes in the 2018 midterm election from what the intelligence services are doing, and from the whole thing of Russiagate, and the right to remove Trump because he was illegally and illegitimately elected because of the involvement of a foreign hostile power. Right. That's the bottom line. And unless that is confronted head on, there's nothing else that you can talk about. That is the driving force of politics at this moment in the United States. And the kind of brinksmanship in domestic politics of both the Democrats and the so-called left or liberal left coordinated with the CIA and FBI, which have been the traditional enemies of anti-war and leftist and progressive forces. I mean, this is horrendous. It is horrible. And it is a betrayal by the left and progressives of all that they have stood for all of these many years. I mean, this is unacceptable. But, you know, the other thing, Don, is the situation in Syria. And the fact that Trump has made troubling and dangerous statements about Idlib. Well, but let's look at on the ground. The Russians have a powerful naval fleet, including cruisers and missile ships that can launch missiles and submarines in the Eastern Mediterranean. In Syria, the Russians and the Iranians and the Hezbollah are joined now by Chinese forces, small force, but nonetheless, they're there.
Yep.
The Assad government is not going to be overthrown. That's clear. Now, this kind of maneuvering around Idlib and of course, it's unclear what Turkey's role is, although Turkey and Russia and Iran are in discussions regularly about how to restore peace in Syria. Merkel and Putin met a couple of weeks in Germany, and one of the things on the table was the repatriation of Syrian refugees and financing their return to Syria and even the redevelopment, rebuilding of the country. I mean, so on the one side, Trump is talking brinksmanship, but on the other side, it's a hollow threat.
Yeah, he's been actually, you know, he's been standing down while Russia, Iran, Hezbollah have been, and Syria, have been winning the war. And this is the last major battle. You know, while this is going on, in other words, while the Syria situation is about to be settled, and while shaking out around that is apparently a new relationship between Turkey and Russia, for example, you have this whole circus that's, you know, it's a sequence of events. First, the guy that, you know, one of the two guys that were credited, the sane one, because we saw his partner at the RNC, and I don't think they want to make him a front man, Carl Bernstein. You know, he comes out with a, I got a president in 1974 and 75, so I'm the go-to guy for getting the next one. Here's my book, okay? And then it gets massive coverage, and then it's ratified, basically, by an anonymous, close to the president, White House source in an editorial page editorial from the New York Times. So all of that rolls out, and you got to ask yourself, how exactly those sequence of events can happen? Who can make those things happen? You know, who are the few people that can do that, and whose interest do they serve? Well, while the world is seeing that, you know, at the same time, Russia and China are beginning joint military exercises, the largest military exercises Russia's done since really 1981. And China yesterday escorted a British ship that was going into position in the South China Sea. In other words, they're anticipating that something may go down here, it looks like, and they're, you know, putting the material and manpower in place to defend.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, and we can never lose sight of these world developments. And you know, add to that the crisis of currencies in the emerging market zone of the world economy, including big ones like Turkey and Argentina and South Africa and India, and this blowing up of the value of the dollar at the expense of these other currencies, and really at it's like a short term let's make some money type of thing in the midst of an administration that really cannot govern or is being hamstrung in its ability to govern. These are the money market hedge fund people who are playing loose and reckless with the world economy. So we have almost a perfect storm of crises converging at this time. And I would say that the eye of the storm is Washington and the United States. So, you know, tighten up your seatbelts, man. Yeah. This is going to be a rocky ride.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting also. We got about 2 minutes left, 3 minutes left. Argentina in particular is an interesting case because the so-called conservative restoration that the U.S. imposed on Brazil, Argentina, Honduras, a number of other places in Latin America. Argentina is kind of the flagship of that, and they got to reimpose their neoliberal economic policies in Buenos Aires, and there's been, you know, strong resistance from the working class there, but Macri has been, you know, one of their good soldiers, and it doesn't matter. They're kicking his legs out from underneath them. So if you cannot restore neoliberal economics to one of these countries without provoking its almost immediate collapse, they don't have many quivers left, you know, many arrows left in their quiver.
And, you know, Don, let us not forget about the Brazilian elections where Lula is in prison, but he's leading in the polls.
Yep, that's right. I know. But they won't let him run, even though the UN says he should be able to run.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, look, it's crisis. You know, one of two... well, there's a multiplicity, I guess, but one of two likely outcomes of the election season in this November would be either Democrats make large gains or they don't, and it's pretty much you know, status quo ante at the end of the day. Assuming in each case, what do you see the dynamics, and any change in the dynamics, or just a slow continuation towards this same thing we've been seeing them move towards?
Well, there are 50 congressional seats that where the real battle is going to take place. And in a lot of ways, these battleground seats are really what will decide it is the white working class. The white working class and lower middle classes. Now, in some instances in these districts, you have a small African-American or Latino minority who can be critical, however they go or whether they vote at all. But in a lot of ways, this is a battle for the soul of the white working class. And that's why... Richard Trumka, head of the AFL-CIO, and other labor leaders coming out supporting Trump's renegotiation of NAFTA could be very decisive in these battles.
Yeah, and just for our listeners' benefit, we have 435 House seats. All of them are up. And then we have 33 Senate seats out of the 100 Senate seats. And yeah, 50 is about right. You're talking about essentially 10% of those seats where they're contested and where control of the House may flip.
Yes.
And with that, again, maybe you can get impeachment. Maybe you can't. But you can certainly, if the Democrats gain control of the House, for example, they get to elect a speaker, and a speaker sets a lot of agenda and gets a lot of face time.
Oh, yeah. And still, whichever way the midterm elections go, the intelligence services, in conjunction with the neocons and neoliberal elites, are still going to push for a coup d'etat, right, to remove this guy from office by any means necessary.
Okay, Tony, we're going to keep an eye on it, as we've been doing since the election. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Don.
Thank you, too. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.